You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show. Happy Feast of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. We talked about it a little bit on Friday with Father Tom Galloway, my guest in the studio, a common holy day that we share with our Orthodox brothers and sisters, the belief that Mary, at the end of her earthly life, was assumed body and soul into heavenly glory. And we'll talk about the Assumption some today. It is not a holy day of obligation this year in the United States. Typically, when the Feast of the Assumption falls on a Saturday or on a Monday, it is not made a holy day of obligation. We may talk about that a little bit, too, but what a glorious bookend, really, to the Annunciation, the beginning of Mary's journey as Mother of God, and, of course, its consummation with her Assumption into heaven. So we'll talk about that in my question of the day. In the next segment, it's going to have something to do with the different beliefs that Catholic Christians have about the Blessed Virgin Mary and which ones perhaps you stumble over. So we'll get into that a little bit later in the program. Some other things I want to get into today. I actually first learned about this through a blog of a deacon, Deacon Greg Kandra, a story of another deacon and his family who lost their young daughter to suicide. The daughter had struggled with bipolar disorder, and the deacon wrote, the grieving father wrote what I thought was a very powerful obituary that really addresses this stigma of mental illness that we seem to have, where we really see mental illness in a whole different category than we do physical illness. And this obituary and this response from this grieving father really challenges, I think, some of those assumptions that we make. So we'll talk about that some in the second hour. I think it's an important topic, how we view mental illness. Also, an ancient belief and a recent dogma. When a nuncio visited Ben Franklin, good news at last from Syria, and Archbishop Charles Chaput, the Archbishop of New York, his take on the upcoming election. We'll also look back at the weekend and Rio, and get into some other things, too. Spin the Dollar Catechism wheel, look back in history, and give out our What Were You Thinking awards, all that and more. No official guest today, so all the more an invitation for you to come be a part of the program. If you have something that you would like to share, a question that you want to ask anytime during the show today, you can call or text me at 573-4BREAD-4. 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Hope you had a good weekend. Saturday, kind of a busy one for me. Friday night, got to do my PA work for my son's high school football team. He's a sophomore, and I've inherited the role of doing the PA announcing for the games. And they had a scrimmage Friday night, so my first really official game will be this coming Friday. For the scrimmage, they were still in practice uniforms, but you have a dry run to get the kinks out, and I had plenty of them, believe me, including calling one young man by a player from last year's team who graduated. So anyway, got to do that Friday night. Pretty toasty warm, no AC up in the press box, and it was a hot one, but I'm sure the players suffered more. And then Saturday, spent all day with some engaged couples, one of the marriage preparation classes that I teach over the course of the year. I think we had 13 engaged couples and a local parish so gracious to host us. And then Saturday night, had the chance to sit down and have dinner with my family, which is becoming increasingly challenging with all the different schedules of people and running and working and all the rest. But got to sit down and have a special dinner. Some delicious steaks that were on manager's special, cheapskate that I am, and I got to enjoy a dinner in celebration of 11 years Catholic. Saturday was our anniversary of entering into the Catholic Church back in 2005. Certainly something that was never in my career plan or never in my wife and I's imagination for many, many years. being relatively ignorant of the Catholic Church and of the Catholic faith. It wasn't so much that I was hostile to Catholicism. Catholicism simply to me was largely irrelevant to my life. I was just a Christian. I happened to be a Methodist, but, you know, I mean, Catholicism was simply a realm of being that held no real significance for me, largely ignorant. And so the fact that now here I am 11 years Catholic is staggering to me. And my children were talking about it a little bit because, you know, my kids were pretty young when we entered the church. Our oldest, I think, was 13, and our youngest had just been born. Now she's going into middle school, so she's our little bellwether marker in terms of how long we've been Catholic. And then yesterday, more of a working kind of a day, unfortunately, in terms of getting ready for school starting this Wednesday in my Old Testament class that I'll be teaching. So pretty busy weekend, but anyway, glad to be back with you. Love to hear about yours. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I didn't get a chance to see. I want to go. I want to take my kids to go see this new Pete's Dragon movie because I read Stephen Graydonis's review of it. He said it's actually better than the original. Well, the truth is I've never seen the original. My kid's still upset with me that there's a number of Disney films that they consider to be classics that they grew up watching that their mom watched with them, but not me. And so my 18-year-old has thrown down the gauntlet and said, until you see the original Pete's Dragon, you know, the one with Mickey Rooney and Helen Reddy, then you can't see the new one. So we'll see how serious she is about that, I guess. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. So I said today, the feast day of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Let me read to you exactly what the Catholic Church teaches about the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And this is from the papal encyclical, the document. Actually, it was an apostolic constitution, but Pope Pius XII, back in 1950, actually, on the Feast of All Saints. And it's a 48-paragraph. Maybe I'll put a link to this. It's, Munificentissimus Deus. There you go. That's a mouthful. Munificentissimus Deus. Pope Pius XII became really the second expression. You know, you had back in the 1800s the dogmatic definition, let's say, of papal infallibility, that the Bishop of Rome and all those bishops in union with him by a special charism or grace of the Holy Spirit, when teaching on a matter of faith and morals in a manner that binds all the faithful, cannot err. It's really rooted in the idea that Jesus, his church will never be overcome by Satan. His church will never collapse or fall. His church will never fall ultimately into error. And so, again, like so many Catholic dogmas, very misunderstood. But since that declaration, there have really only been two extraordinary expressions of what we call the magisterium. In other words, two dogmas defined and articulated in a very clear statement like this one, right, in which the Pope intends to speak a dogma, and he does in fact do it. The first was the Immaculate Conception, that Mary was conceived without sin by a special grace, a singular grace rooted in Jesus Christ. As we talked about on Friday with Father Tom, it's not that she didn't need saving. Her salvation came on the front end, where she was preserved free from the stain of original sin. Pope Pius XII saw this dogma, the second one, the dogma of the Assumption, defined in 1950 on All Saints' Day, as to be the corollary to the feast of the Immaculate Conception. They go together because our bodies see decay and corruption precisely because or as a consequence of sin. But someone free from sin from the moment of her conception would not experience that corruption. You might even say that in a sense, even though the dogma of the Immaculate Conception was proclaimed first and the Assumption dogmatically defined after, even though it had been a long held and cherished belief throughout the Christian world, that it really was the historical belief in the Assumption that made possible the dogmatic declaration of the Immaculate Conception, because only because she was without sin could she be assumed, if it makes you more comfortable, raptured into heaven, body and soul. So here's the statement from Pope Pius XII. By the authority of our Lord Jesus Christ, he writes, of the blessed apostles Peter and Paul, and by our own authority, we pronounce, declare, and define it to be a divinely revealed dogma that the Immaculate Mother of God, the ever-Virgin Mary, having completed the course of her earthly life, was assumed body and soul into heavenly glory. We'll talk about that more on the other side of the break, including some of the other Marian dogmas. And particularly, I want to talk about why it's appropriate that it was declared on All Saints Day. For this Monday, let's pray the Hail, Holy Queen. Very fitting prayer to pray. Lift up your concerns. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Hail, Holy Queen, Mother of Mercy, our life, our sweetness, and our hope. To thee do we cry, poor banished children of Eve. To thee do we send up our sighs, mourning and weeping in this valley of tears. Turn then, most gracious Advocate, thine eyes of mercy toward us. And after this our exile, show unto us the blessed fruit of thy womb, Jesus. O clement, O loving, O sweet Virgin Mary, pray for us, O Holy Mother of God, that we may be made worthy of the promises of Christ. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Fifteen minutes past the hour. You're back on the Mike Allen Show. Here on Breadbox Media. Want to learn more about Breadbox Media? Just go to breadboxmedia.com and you can read all about it. There's even a helpful little animated video so you can understand what this media enterprise is about, this digital apostolate, really, in which we seek to spread the hope of Jesus Christ and his love to all the world. It is, as it's been said before, evangelization simply is one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. And we're all beggars. We're all in desperate need of truth, of hope, of light in a world where there's so much heartache. And we have found in Jesus Christ the fulfillment of all our hopes and desires. Doesn't mean we don't experience life as it is and the unpredictability and the miseries or the temptations or the trials and all the rest. What I can't imagine is how one deals with those things without the love, the companionship, the grace and the hope offered in Jesus Christ. We also believe Jesus founded a church upon St. Peter and the apostles that continues down through the century, that it is a sure and true guide for us, and a place where we can discover not only what it means to belong to him, but to belong to his bride, the church. And so we accompany that as well, helping people understand, overcome some of their misconceptions about the Catholic Church, of which there are many. So all of this through Breadbox Media. You'll hear different contributors from really all around the country, from all the coasts and corners and across the Midwest and everything else, all with different temperaments, perspectives, topics, all through the lens of the Catholic faith. So check it out at breadboxmedia.com. You can listen to podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, or on Podbean. You can also become a friend of your favorite show and invite you to be a friend of this show. And through a monthly contribution, receive access to exclusive online content. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to call or text. Be on the program today, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. My question of the day is, today is the Feast of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, that at the end of her earthly life, the belief is that the Blessed Virgin Mary was assumed body and soul into heaven. Now, the use of language here is important, right? Our Lord, we believe, ascended to heaven, which we celebrate the ascension there 10 days on Thursday, 10 days before Pentecost. He ascended. The Blessed Virgin Mary was assumed. His was active, hers passive. But it's as I said, the corollary of the belief that she was conceived free from original sin, not to her own credit, by the way. Who can affect their own conception? in fact, if anything, it underscores the fact that it was all grace. But her being conceived free from original sin so that she could be a pure vessel as the mother of our incarnate Lord, it's the corollary to that. There was no sin and no consequence of corruption that we all experience. The separation of our body from our soul at death, that is a consequence of sin. It is an unnatural state. That's what we call it, death. But at the end of human history, when Christ returns, the dead are raised, our bodies reconstituted, glorified, spiritualized. We will be embodied souls for all eternity. Mary simply is the foretaste or the sneak preview of coming attractions through her own assumption. Anyway, so I'm asking a question today about the four Marian dogmas, because you want to boil down Catholic teaching about the Blessed Virgin Mary, that saint who is queen of angels and saints, still qualitatively and infinitely below the divinity of her son. But here are the four dogmas. This, according to this summed up here, the Catholic News Agency website. I'll put a link to this. I think I put it actually on the Facebook page with the question. One, Mary's divine motherhood, which was proclaimed at the Council of Ephesus in 431. She is called Mother of God, or as our Orthodox friends more commonly call her, Theotokos, or the bearer or birth giver of God. The belief that Mary not only gave birth to Jesus Christ, the flesh, not just Jesus, the human being, but Jesus Christ as well, the divine Son of God, who pre-existed but was united at his conception. He assumed human flesh and was born of the Virgin Mary. And so she is called rightly the Mother of God. So Mary's divine motherhood is the first Marian dogma. The second, perpetual virginity. And by the way, don't be put off by the word dogma. Some people see that as a negative word. They love the bumper sticker, my karma ran over my dogma. Dogma is simply a belief one must have to be identified with a particular group, a non-negotiable belief. Everybody's got dogma. Every group. The local chapter of PETA has a dogma. A local environmental group has a dogma. A local wine tasters club has dogma. It's just part of what it means to be something, right? Number two, perpetual virginity. This is the belief that Mary not only was conceived within her womb as a virgin, she was a virgin before, during, and after the birth of Jesus. So her perpetual virginity, then again, this title, Ever Virgin, a very, very ancient title of the Blessed Virgin Mary. The third one is the Immaculate Conception, which we've already explained. It is a singular act of grace. She was conceived free and by the merits of Jesus, free from the stain of original sin. And then fourth is the Assumption, which, by the way, even though it was dogmatically clarified in 1950, had been an ancient view and belief of the church dating from at least the 4th or the 5th century if not earlier. So those are the four: Mary's divine motherhood, Mary's perpetual virginity, Mary's immaculate conception, and her assumption. My question is, are there any of those that you trip over? Whether you're Catholic or not, because you may find Catholics who trip over these things as well. Are there any of these that you trip over? Are you able to unhesitatingly affirm all four? Now, you may not be Catholic. And one of the things that you might be interested to know is that some of these were affirmed without hesitation by some of the earliest Protestants. Martin Luther, John Calvin would have had no problem with Mary's divine motherhood. They would have had no problem with Mary's perpetual virginity. They even disputed the idea that's a relatively late one in church history, that Mary had other children besides Jesus. And I'm not sure about on the Assumption and the Immaculate Conception. I need to look into that a little bit more. But you'd be surprised sometimes at the Marian beliefs held by the earliest Protestants that were then later rejected a few generations down the line. Just now, we're seeing a recovery, I think, of appreciation for the Blessed Virgin Mary among evangelicals, which I think is none too soon and can be an opportunity for great unity and a growing in unity among our various communions. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to chime in on that question. 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I did not see a lot of the Olympics, hardly any of the Olympics, actually, this weekend, to be honest with you. So I'm catching up a little bit on it this morning and saw that Usain Bolt, the Jamaican sprinter, won his third consecutive gold medal in the 100 meters. Won it in 9.81, his coronation that secured his place as the greatest sprinter of all time. I think that's a decent bit off his world record pace of like 9.58. Has he run one that fast? I mean, I can still remember, I think it was the 92 Olympics when, Ben Johnson ran what people thought was a ridiculous 9.79 that then became, of course, he was disqualified because of the very obvious use of performance-enhancing drugs. That seemed 9.79 unthinkable. Usain Bolt, I guess, has run a 9.58, which is unbelievable. Anyway, but so 9.81, still blazing, but winning the gold medal again. As I've said, he has the second best name in all of sports. I mean, you're a sprinter with the last name Bolt. I still say Hope Solo, the U.S. goalie, despite the U.S. women's team loss and some of Hope Solo's controversial lashing out at teammates. She still has the best name in all of sports. And I think, Katie Ledecky and Michael Phelps added to their gold haul, as did Simone Biles. So it really has been a decorative Olympics, let's just say, for some of these top American athletes. But kudos to Usain Bolt. Okay, let's see if we can sneak in a What Were You Thinking nominee here for the day, and then we'll maybe get to the other two on the other side of the break. As we say, go dumb or go home. First winner is going to be a restaurant in British Columbia, I guess, who decided to name a drink after a serial killer. That was a really bright move there. Robert Willie Picton is serving a life sentence at Kent Institution after being convicted of killing six women. This may be over from across the pond. No, this was in British Columbia. There was a restaurant somehow that named a drink the Willie Picton. Smart move there. We'll pick up with more of this on the other side of the break. Our other nominees, this is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show on this Monday, August 15th, Feast of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, that the Blessed Virgin Mary, at the end of her earthly life, having no stain of sin, was received body and soul into heavenly glory. One of the Marian dogmas of the Church, along with the Mary's divine motherhood, she's rightly called the Mother of God or the Bearer of God, the Theotokos. Her perpetual virginity, a virgin before, during, and after the birth of her son, and Mary's Immaculate Conception, that by a singular act of God's grace, she was conceived free from original sin by the merits of Jesus Christ. So my question is, which of those Marian dogmas, if any, do you stumble over? Love to hear from you on that too. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can actually call or text. You don't even have to give your name if you want to send an email or a text. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Would love to hear from you on that. Keeping an eye on the situation in Milwaukee, where there's been violence now for two consecutive nights after the shooting of a black man by a police officer there, and it's pretty bad. We need to keep the people of Milwaukee in our prayers and keep this situation in our prayers, and the tension really throughout this country between minority neighborhoods and law enforcement, and so much distrust there, so much violence, it seems like, so much need for healing and reconciliation. And it's only going to come somehow through the mercy of God, but how that can be manifest. Mercy and justice in the midst of all this. Unbelievable. So we'll keep an eye on that. Let's get back to our What Were You Thinking nominees as we span the globe for, again, examples of people not putting their best thinking, their best gray matter forward. That's our What Were You Thinking award. And like I said, you can be thankful that it's not you in this instance. As I said in our first nominee, Willie Picton up in British Columbia, who has confessed and is serving a life sentence for murdering 49 women. There was a restaurant there, Surrey Wings, that had a drink on their menu called the Willie Picton. Not cool. Not cool. Well, that's not our only unfortunate choice of glorifying bad behavior against women, because the Chicago Cubs, who are enjoying a stellar year. I didn't happen to see whether or not they beat the Cardinals again last night, but they've got a hefty lead in the NL Central. Evidently, Aroldis Chapman, the flame-throwing Cuban closer that they acquired from the Yankees, who acquired him from my beloved Cincinnati Reds. If you'll recall, Aroldis Chapman served a 30-game suspension or 30-day suspension at the beginning of the season for being charged last year with hitting his girlfriend, assaulting his girlfriend. So evidently, when Sunday night, when reliever Aroldis Chapman pitched a scoreless ninth, the Wrigley Field public address system reportedly blared the song. You know how these players have songs associated with them, you know? I know going to a Reds game, every time they come to the plate, there's a different, you know, each player has their own signature song. Well, after he pitched a scoreless ninth, the Wrigley Field PA system reportedly blared the song Smack My B Up. Really? Really? Is this somebody's attempt at humor? I mean, seriously, I've told bad jokes before, but that? Oh my goodness. Well, somebody's going to be out on their ear. I mean, how do you even... whatever. So that's number two. By the way, as I said, I'm doing PA work for our local Catholic high school football team. We're having to go through that process now of picking the music out for our games. Some of the player-requested songs, no. They will not be going up on the PA at a Catholic high school football game. It's amazing. I mean, it is true in every generation, right? I'm sure, you know, when I was in high school, there would have been songs suggested that would not have been. You know, it's one thing to listen to something on your by yourself. Another thing to blare it out over speakers for all the world to hear. Anyway, but our winner, going on to a different topic, this story in ABC News. This from New York City. A guy who claims he has the biggest cat in the city. And he claims it's not fat. A 28-pound cat that is rivaling the size of a bobcat. You ought to see a picture of this thing. In a minute, I'll put a link to this on the show's Facebook page. This guy's proud of it. He's got followers on Instagram holding up this behemoth of a cat. 28 pounds. And they live there in his apartment. Samson is the name of the cat that he inherited from his brother who could no longer take care of him. People in the streets see him. They want their picture taken with him. Here's my only... This is why this guy makes the What Were You Thinking list as he celebrates the hugeness of his cat. Did he not read that story just a few weeks ago that actually said that your cat wants to kill you? And the only reason that he doesn't or she doesn't is because it's just not big enough. But that every cat really wants to kill you. So keep feeding that cat, buddy. Let me know how that works out. By the way, there was a funny website I saw. How to tell if your cat is plotting to kill you. And there's several things here. Kneading on you, you know, where your cat stands up on you and kind of pushes. As this story says, you may think this is a sign of affection, but your cat is actually checking your internal organs for weaknesses. Another sign, excessive shoveling of kitty litter. After using the litter box, your cat needlessly kicks litter around. Most of it ends up being all over the room. This is practice for burying bodies. Staring contests. If you get caught in a staring contest with your cat, do not look away. Looking away will signal to your cat that you're weak. An attack is likely to follow. How about bringing you dead animals? You ever have your cat do this? As this website says, this isn't a gift. It's a warning. How about sleeping on your electronics? Your cat knows that humans have superior technology and thus will attempt to disrupt all communications to the outside world. How about hiding in dark places and watching you? Your cat will often hide in order to study you in your natural habitat and then pawing at your face while you sleep. Cats aren't very good at smothering people, but this won't stop from trying. 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to chime in, 573-4BREAD-4. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Which of the four Marian dogmas do you stumble over the most? Whether it's divine motherhood of Mary, whether it's her perpetual virginity, her immaculate conception, or her assumption, body and soul, into heaven. 573-4BREAD-4. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Interesting article from Archbishop Charles Chaput, the Philadelphia prelate, who I actually have a lot of admiration for. He used to be in Denver. He's the Archbishop of Denver. Now he's the Archbishop of Philadelphia. Perhaps could be named a cardinal sometime in the next few years. He has written an article in which he says that both candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, have astonishing flaws. But it's a fact that he calls depressing and liberating at the same time for Catholic voters. He says it's liberating because it's easier to ignore the tribal loyalty chants of both parties. Ahead of the presidential elections, Archbishop Charles Chaput says of the presidential election, this is depressing and liberating. He says depressing because it's proof of how polarized the nation has become. And liberating because for the honest voter, it's much easier this year to ignore the routine tribal loyalty chants of both Democratic and Republican camps. He also argues that because of the financial reality of both candidates, with Trump being worth roughly $4.5 billion, according to Forbes, and Clinton $45 million, neither lives, quote, anywhere near the solar system where most Americans live, work, and raise families. Yet, he says, voters are asked to trust them. The Archbishop, who claims he still doesn't know who he'll vote for when the time comes, masks his personal opinion of either candidate by describing them through the view of a lot of people. Hence, he says, Trump comes out as an eccentric businessman of defective ethics whose bombast and buffoonery make him inconceivable as president. Clinton, on the other hand, should be under criminal indictment in the view of others. He described Friday's column, Archbishop Chaput, as thoughts from a brother in the faith, not as teachings from an archbishop. And he also went after Vice President Joe Biden and Clinton's vice presidential running mate, Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, two self-identified Catholics who, according to Chaput, seem to publicly ignore or invent the content of their Catholic faith as they go along. So, interesting. Archbishop Chaput feeling the pain that the rest of us feel, hoping and wishing there would be a none-of-the-above option in the presidential election this fall. We'll be back with more on the other side of the break. We'll look back at history, among other things. This is The Mike Allen Show. You are listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show, asking a question today on this Feast of the Assumption. Which of the Marian dogmas do you find yourself tripping over? Or maybe if you're somebody who came into the Catholic Church, as an adult, maybe there were some misconceptions or even some of the actual official teachings of the Catholic Church about the Blessed Virgin Mary that you stumbled over a bit. And now you appreciate them, but there was a time there when you didn't quite get it. So would love to hear from you on that. 573-4-BREAD-4, you can call or text, or maybe you still have a question about it. Maybe you're not Catholic, or maybe you are, and you want to try to understand better the Catholic teaching. One of the things that was very interesting for me on my journey to the Catholic faith was in the process of not only correcting my misconceptions, was discovering how many what I thought were really kind of weird Catholic teachings, how ancient the beliefs were. And just because something is an ancient belief doesn't necessarily make it true just by that fact alone, right? But the idea that this was somehow a medieval invention of, the scholastics during the Dark Ages or whatever doesn't really hold water when you go back and look historically speaking. And, one of the interesting things, of course, about Mary is that even though there were relics that survived of the apostles, for example, those who were closest in their ministry to Jesus because of this belief in holiness and sanctity and material things and either parts of their bodies or even the place where they were buried, their tomb had a special holiness or sanctity about it. and it became an avenue for grace. With the Blessed Virgin Mary, there were no relics. There have not been relics. How do you understand that? And as I said, really, I think in some ways you could say that belief in the Assumption drove belief in the Immaculate Conception, even though the Immaculate Conception actually was defined dogmatically first. Because that's really, you know, when Pope Pius XII in 1950, through his Apostolic Constitution, used the extraordinary teaching of the Magisterium, the teaching authority of his role as the Bishop of Rome, as the Pope, he wasn't creating a new belief. It's not like he rolled out of bed one morning and said, you know, I think we're going to have a nice Italian breakfast, and then I'm going to create this out of whole cloth, this belief of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Now, a dogma is only defined when there's some dispute about it. And really, since the Protestant Reformation, and really not even the beginning of the Protestant Reformation, but generations removed, it had become an issue in which there was some division and dispute. And so he wanted to clarify. And it's actually a quite, if you read the statement itself, it's not a very detailed statement. It's actually very reticent to give details, such as, for example, did the Blessed Virgin Mary actually die or not? The Church proclaims or holds to a certain agnosticism about that. But so it's actually a very modest statement, but it is dogmatically defined. And therefore, as a Catholic, you are bound to believe it and to affirm it, even if you don't always understand it. This is the thing about the Catholic faith. It's faith that leads to understanding and not vice versa. Right? So once we make the decision of our will that we're going to submit our will and our intellect, and we choose to believe something, giving the Church, in a sense, the benefit of the doubt, it's amazing then, as we think about it and pray about it and see it within the light and the context of the entire teaching of the Church, how it makes more and more sense. Because as we've said many times with Dial Catechism, truth is never random. And the Catholic faith, if anything, is so integrated and interwoven and stitched together that all these Marian dogmas are interrelated and interdependent in many ways. So your thought on that, 573-4-BREAD-4, if you want to call or text, 573-4-BREAD-4. Man, maybe more information than you want, but I'm still sweating in here. I woke up this morning, well, I was leaving to come into the studio, came out, and all of a sudden I heard the sound of the garbage truck coming down the opposite side of my street and realized I had made the dreaded mistake of forgetting to roll my trash can to the curb last night. And they had already been down my side of the street. I saw my neighbor's trash cans emptied and sitting there. Let me tell you, what, you got a family our size, big family? We fill up that trash can quickly. To have to go another week to get rid of that puppy? Not good. So I actually ran up to the front of my house, grabbed the trash can, had to dodge traffic to cross over to the other side of the street just in front of the trash truck, and then had to beg the guy with his big claw lift, please empty my trash can too. And he graciously did. So if you're listening out there, if you're tuned in while you're on your morning garbage run, thank you. Thank you. I'm much appreciative. That way I don't have to set bags outside my trash can and have animals tear them open and all the rest. Anyway, let's look back in history a little bit on this day. Besides the celebration of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, what are some other things that we can trace down over the years? August 15th, 1534, Ignatius of Loyola and six classmates took initial vows leading to the creation of the Society of Jesus, also known as the Jesuits, in September 1540. Now, interestingly, only 15 years after Ignatius of Loyola and his six classmates took those initial vows, 15 years later, the Jesuit priest St. Francis Xavier came ashore at Kagoshima in Japan. So they were serious about that mission thing, weren't they? And oftentimes overlooked was the fruitfulness of those early missions to Japan, so much so that their successes began to alarm the emperor and led to some great anti-Christian and anti-Catholic persecution there on the island. 1769, Napoleon Bonaparte, born on this day on the island of Corsica. Not a Frenchman, but became, of course, a French despot. 1843, the Cathedral of Our Lady of Peace in Honolulu, Hawaii is dedicated. We talked about Hawaii last week. It is the oldest Roman Catholic cathedral in continuous use in the U.S. Let's see, 1939, The Wizard of Oz premiered at Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood. Been there one time when I was about 10 years old. VJ Day on this day in 1945, one day after Japan agreed to surrender unconditionally. 1965, the Beatles played to nearly 60,000 fans at Shea Stadium in New York City, an event later regarded as the birth of stadium rock. Ben Affleck's birthday, born in 1972, so he's 44 years old. Jennifer Lawrence, 26 years old today. The actress, Academy Award winner, a very talented, lovely woman, Louisville fan, no one's perfect. Talked about Jennifer Lawrence on Saturday, actually. If you remember that mini scandal from a few years ago when her iCloud account was hacked and some naked pictures of the actress got disseminated, and she, understandably so, was very, very upset. And angry, really. Said that anyone who looked at those pictures without permission were guilty of a sex crime. But in that interview, an overlooked line she had in explaining why she had naked pictures of herself on her iCloud account, she talked about how she was in a very healthy long-distance relationship, she said, over a period of 4 years. And she said, either your boyfriend is going to look at porn or he's going to look at you. And as I told them Saturday when I read that quote, having a daughter who's only a little younger than Jennifer Lawrence, my heart sank because it made me realize we're living in this age in which sometimes we have so blurred the understanding between loving someone and using someone that it's almost as if we think that's the best we can hope for, that, you know, at least my boyfriend will use me instead of using someone else. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old prude, but that's kind of what I read when I read that statement. So anyway, Jennifer Lawrence, you were made, we were all made for more than that and for better than that, to be loved and to love, not to be used or to use. 1993, on this day, the last of Nolan Ryan's 324 wins. Wow, what a career. What a titanically great and gifted pitcher. And then in 1999, on this day, Tiger Woods, I think it was his first major since winning the Masters 2 years earlier. He won the PGA Championship shooting a 277 at Medina Country Club. Tiger, never thought I'd say this, but we miss you. Your presence was good for the game and good for interest, for sure. 573-4BREAD-4, if you've got a comment or a question, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Coming up in the second hour, one of the things I want to talk about is the stigma of mental illness, really exposed through a very poignant obituary written by a deacon about the suicide of his young daughter. It really, I think, provokes thought about the way we view mental illness and those who struggle with it, somehow viewing it in a way different than physical illness, and it's unfortunate. I also want to tell you, when we come back from the break, about a terrible thing. It's going to be happening in Oklahoma today, and I invite you to offer prayers of reparation for it. All has to do with the Blessed Virgin Mary and her Assumption. We'll be back. This is The Mike Allen Show.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.